rest of our lives are going to look like.
Now, the second part of Georgia's constitutional amendment said that the state would not recognize unions performed in other states. That is now also tossed by today's Supreme Court ruling. The Southern Baptist Convention, Rose, passed a resolution earlier this month saying its pastors would not perform marriage ceremonies for same-sex couples. The Georgia Baptist Convention's public affairs director, Mike Griffin, told WABE today that the U.S. Supreme Court decision opens the issue to what he called, these are his words, a wide frontier.
Could be anything from group marriages to polygamy to incest. I mean, all that's open to marrying anything, because if marriage is a definition upon which we do not base upon what the meaning has been in common law or history or biblical, then it's wide open.
And Dennis, Tanya Washington is an associate professor of law at Georgia State University. She joins us now in our Closer Look studios. But Professor Washington, thanks for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
You know, you co-authored a brief in this case that was before the Supreme Court, and the court actually cited that brief in the majority opinion.
Yes, that was quite exciting, and I'm really grateful that part of the court's ruling was supported by an acknowledgement of how these marriage bans adversely impacted children in same-sex families and deprived them of the legal parent-child relationships with both parents.
And you had been focusing on that. Let me ask you this, were you surprised by that 5-4 vote?
No, I wasn't. It was expected. And I'm grateful that the court actually focused on same-sex couples having the same fundamental constitutionally protected right to marriage that heterosexual couples enjoy.
It seems as if, and you can tell me if in reading the opinion you feel that this is the way things broke down, that the majority were looking at the federally guaranteed rights that we have in the U.S. Constitution, and they said that those rights, equal protection, should apply to same-sex couples. Those dissenting were looking at the traditional province of states that the Constitution has given them to regulate things like marriage. Is that basically the division of opinion here, looking at different aspects of our U.S. Constitution?
I think that's a pretty fair characterization. The dissenting judges were making arguments about states' rights,
right,
and states have routinely and historically exercised province over things that relate to families, domestic law, including marriage. However, there are certain rights, even within that sphere, that are so important, so fundamental, and so embedded in our Constitution that the state regulation of those rights has to meet constitutional scrutiny.
And when you think about it, that debate over our federally guaranteed rights and whether those are so important in individual arguments like this one that they trump the right of states to regulate things, that argument is as old as the country, isn't it?
It is. And it's referred to in the legal academy as federalism, right? So the power division between the federal government and the states.
Okay. I want to go back to something we just heard from Mike Griffin, who's with the Georgia's Baptist Convention, and talking about this resolution that they passed earlier saying their pastors would not perform marriage ceremonies for same-sex couples. Now we're going to get into, if they can want to continue that, now we get into some other legal issues here. What are churches and religious denominations, what are they going to do here? Can they really enforce this and do this practice?
I think mosques, churches, synagogues are going to be able, within their First Amendment rights, to decide whether they want to marry same-sex couples. They have the discretion to do so, and the discretion is actually protected. But
yeah,
when
you're
talking,
got another federal constitution protected right here.
Exactly. But when you're talking about court clerks and magistrates and judges, even if they have religious beliefs that are opposed to same-sex marriage, they are state officials, and they have to exercise the law in a non-discriminatory way in light of this decision.
You know, something that we didn't get to talk with Beth Luttrell with earlier, who was with Lambda Legal, and this also has an impact on, we talk about immigration too, because if you want to marry something, you know, there's been that whole argument, it applies to every aspect of marriage now.
Yes, it is going to be far-reaching, and our processes, protocols, forms are going to have to catch up with this new reality, right? So all the forms have to be reprinted that say husband and wife. Now they have to say, I don't know if they'll say partner and partner, or there'll be three different sets of forms. We don't know. We will adjust. And I have confidence that the American public and our public entities will be able to adjust to this new reality.
Rose mentioned our conversation with Beth Luttrell about an hour ago. And for those who weren't with us, she said she was surprised that the vote was 5-4 and not 6-3. She thought that perhaps Chief Justice Roberts would vote with the majority. He did not. In fact, he wrote a very strongly worded dissent, and here's part of it. If you are among the many Americans of whatever sexual orientation who favor expanding same-sex marriage, by all means, celebrate today's decision. And he continued, celebrate the achievement of a desired goal, celebrate the opportunity of a new expression of commitment to a partner, celebrate the availability of new benefits, but do not celebrate the Constitution. It had nothing to do with it. Pretty strong words from Justice Roberts. Did that surprise you?
Well, I respectfully disagree with the good Chief Justice. I think this has everything to do with the Constitution and an interpretation of the Constitution that is inclusive, that adheres to a fundamental principle of fairness and inclusion. And I think the court properly interpreted the Constitution to provide protection for the right to marry as a fundamental right.
But if you look at the first part of what he said there in those paragraphs, he said, celebrate the achievement of a desired goal, celebrate the opportunity of a new expression of commitment to a partner. It sounds as if he's saying, look, my heart is with you, but legally I can't go there, not because of any moral objection, but because of my view of the Constitution. Do you think that's what he's saying? I mean, I don't want to put words Chief Justice's mouth, but it sounds...
I think that's a fair interpretation, and I would respond by saying I think this was not just a moral victory, but I actually think it was a legal victory. And I think the avalanche of cases that were decided by federal district courts and state courts and federal circuit courts after the Windsor decision confirmed that this is not just a decision that's well-intentioned. It falls within the scope of a very fair and accurate interpretation of what rights the Constitution protects.
Professor Washington, I want to get your thoughts again, and I know we're spending a lot of time on Roberts, but I think it needs to be highlighted here because he says the majority's decision is an act of will, not legal judgment. The right it announces has no basis in the Constitution or this court's precedent. And when you look at the makeup of the court and you look up at who appointed whom to the mm-hmm. court, going further, what's sort of your opinion as to how we will see some of these chief justices? What will happen in the future in terms of appointments here?
Well, I think it's a very good question. And I think that the allegations of judicial activism, that which is the way I would characterize kind of Roberts' characterization of the majority opinion and the decision itself, are somewhat subjective. So if you don't agree with the majority opinion, you say the judges are being activists. Mm-hmm. There were people who criticized the decision that was issued around the Affordable Care Act as judicial activism, and they just happened, I guess, coincidentally, to be people who opposed the decision. So I don't think that's a fair characterization of what the court did, and I do think the public will probably be more attentive to who the president is in light of the fact that they will have an opportunity to appoint one, maybe two or three Supreme Court justices, given the number of landmark decisions that have been issued in the past couple of years.
Which brings me right to where Rose was going, looking at the future. We have seen already an effort, this is now keying off of Roe versus Wade, the historic 1973 decision on abortion. We have seen efforts to bring test cases before, obviously, a newly constituted court since 1973, to overturn Roe versus Wade. Do you think that there will be similar efforts in the future when some justices are replaced to do the same thing, especially since this was such a narrow ruling?
I always think it's possible. You're always going to have people who challenge decisions with which they disagree. I think the challenges may come in a more subtle form, and they'll arise in the context of First Amendment rights to deny same-sex couples access to certain services that are related to marriage, et cetera. But I think that it is always harder to take a right away once people have enjoyed it. And we saw that with the Affordable Care Act decision. You have all these people who now are married. And the longer they stay married, the harder it is going to be to deprive them of that marriage.
But with a 5-4 ruling, does that leave the general public with some uncertainty here about, oh gosh, you know, maybe there is some legal question about this, no matter how it came out with a 5-4 ruling, whereas in the past in civil rights cases, for instance, we saw great big majorities or even unanimous rulings in order to say, you know, this really is the way it should be.
Yes, I do think that a 7-0 or 9-0 decision definitely communicates something different to the public, but a 5-4 victory is a victory nonetheless.
Talking about the victory, and one thing that you talked about before on this program was that having this ruling, as much as the celebration for being able to marry, but also the implication as it relates to children.
Mm-hmm.
And you're hoping that that doesn't get lost in all of this.
Absolutely. I am really, really excited, not only about the decision itself, but also that the court's analysis highlighted the impact that these bans have on children, which I think will have implications in other areas. That children's rights deserve some recognition. And so children now in same-sex families have immediately, as of the issuance of this decision, have legal parent-child relationships with both parents. And there are a plethora of tangible and intangible benefits that that comes with.
Tanya Washington is an associate professor of law at Georgia State University. She joined us in our Closer Look studio to talk about this historic ruling today from the United States Supreme Court. Professor Washington, as always, thanks for coming in. We appreciate
it. Thank you, Rose. Thank you, Dennis.